Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country.
The Senate overnight passing a bill to fund the TSA.
Relief is finally in sight for airport workers and travelers.
President Trump extending the deadline for Iran to open the Strait of Hormuz.
This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. ICE, TSA, DHS. Acronyms we've all heard a lot about lately, but let's break it down. Here's WBEN Radio.
Took until after 2 a.m., but with senators facing the reality they were not going to pass the entire DHS budget, they passed the parts both sides agreed on, including money for TSA and its officers and other parts, including the Coast Guard, by unanimous consent. Left out is money for ICE, where Democrats are holding out for changes in operating procedures and parts of Customs and Border Protection. The House still needs to act before any money can flow.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke on the Senate floor a little after 2 a.m. While Schumer are blaming Republicans for not agreeing to reforms to ICE demanded by Democrats. DHS funding ran out more than 40 days ago. Democrats withholding support for any more funding until lawmakers could agree on a set of reforms. The package doesn't include any of those. Still needs to be approved by the House and will have to go before the president for his signature.
President Trump again pushing back the deadline that he set for Iran to lift its threats against ships moving through the Strait of Hormuz or face American bombing of Iranian power plants.
The president appears hopeful a deal to end the war is possible. He's now extended the deadline for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz by 10 days, threatening to bomb crucial power plants if Iran doesn't comply.
They want to make a deal. The reason they want to make a deal is they have been just beat to.
Iran denies any talks have been held, but acknowledges trading messages with the U.S. through Pakistan.
Here's Tara Servaius' take on the funding deal.
Anytime Democrats and Republicans in the Senate agree to something, it frightens me.
Yeah.
I get very scared. Yeah. I get very uncomfortable. I start to sweat and then I itch.
There's a history of that.
Because those Republicans in the Senate are rascals. I'm kind of waiting to see if there's some part of this deal that
the other shoe to proverbial drop.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now, you could tell why the Democrats had to do this, because Trump was just talking executive order to find a way to fund their enemies, which now include the TSA. Go ahead, figure that one out. But that would have made Trump the hero. That would have made Trump look good. Democrats can't have Trump looking good, no matter how much danger that puts the American people in. And so they had to capitulate. They had to do something. I can tell from some of the things I'm learning here that Democrats aren't going to be happy with this deal.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah. So there's definitely some good things in there. Donald Trump saying, you know, well, he hasn't weighed in yet, but the Republicans saying, you know, hey, no, we're not giving up the masking, as far as I can tell. So I don't know. The other parts of it that are really unclear, and the reporting on it's been pretty abysmal, is that, what are we talking about? DHS is funded, but ICE isn't funded. I don't understand that because ICE was funded through, for years.
Yeah, it was already funded.
2029. Yeah, it was funded through 2029 in the Trump big beautiful bill. Yeah. So, I mean, if they rescinded that, I am not going to be happy. There was some talk about funding ICE for 10 years, which would be even more. Yeah. I'll take that deal all day long.
I want to see the particulars on it, but in concept, yes, I get you.
Exactly. Especially since that would, I think, frustrate Democrats and begin to hurt their turnout. So, because they would be extremely frustrated with their leaders. I don't know what they got overnight. It's going to be very interesting to see.
Well, I think this is one of those situations where Democrats were fine with taking some of the blame if they can also blame Republicans. And I think that's where they were. But they just didn't want anything that made Trump look good or Republicans look like that they're the ones that are being the adults in the room.
Yeah. So going to be very interesting to see. The problem is the Senate passed this thing 2 a.m. and then dumped it on the House and took off for vacation.
Well, of course, for it to actually pass, they would have to pass it as it was presented by the Senate. If there are any differences, it goes to conference committee and we're still in the same boat.
And that's a problem because that creates two more weeks of chaos.
Yeah.
And what you have right now is the Senate, in a lot of ways, acting as the Democrat arm and opposing the Republican arm in the House. In other words, dumping this on the House is a way to try to force them to take this deal and whatever deal. Yeah. I mean, honestly, Thune acts more like a Democrat. This is a tactic. If it was a Democrat-controlled Senate,
he's hiding behind the lazy filibuster.
Yeah.
That's what he's hiding behind.
And a whole pack of lies about things he can't do. If he wanted to do this, he could get it done.
Yes.
He doesn't want to do this. So he's playing all kinds of games. Mike Lee, Senator Mike Lee, was outraged that they're going on vacation. He said that's a reward to Democrats. He said they should have had to cancel their vacation, been kept right there until they get the SAVE Act done.
Yeah.
And this is what's maddening about that, okay? Thune lies and lies and lies. He's very much like a Democrat. And that's because he's a Bush guy, and they would rather deal with Democrats than Republicans. That whole bunch of them, it's about 15% of the Republican Party now that's left, was brought in to capitulate to Democrats. That was their job. And Thune very much operates that way. He knows, he has been saying for weeks, well, you know, SAVE Act, we don't have time. I mean, we'd have to go for weeks of filibuster talking, you know, if you use the traditional filibuster. We just don't have time for that. So sorry, we'll have to let the Democrats cheat. Now, this is a guy who's blocked it for over 300 days. We had plenty of time in that 300 days where, you know, the House was, you know, working on the big, you know, beautiful bill, doing all of that stuff. Senate was doing nothing, okay? So he blocks it in committee. Now he says he doesn't have time and then goes on vacation for 2 weeks. He has the power to say, no, we're not. We're canceling that. We're done. We're going to stay here. We'll just debate straight through the vacation. Sorry, you guys wanted a campaign. Too bad. We'll keep you here. We don't want you out there campaigning anyway. Besides, you haven't done your work. We're supposed to pass the SAVE Act. So you guys are going to oppose it. Let's do it. Let's get down to it. Let's spend the 2 weeks running down the clock, because you can run down the clock on a talking filibuster. And that's what we'll do for the next 2 weeks. If you guys won't pass it, or maybe you want to pass it, you want to go on vacation, go ahead, pass it. That's what someone who wants to win does. Thune doesn't. He doesn't want to win. And here's what Thune knows. This is what is going on here, if this doesn't make any sense to you. When Karl Rove recruited these Republicans, this is in the early 2000s, through about 2010, but really early 2000s, you could have, and there was a great Politico article on it at the time, Lee, you could either have $400,000 used for you in the primary, but you had to pledge to vote for amnesty and generally open borders things. Or you could have it used against you in the primary for your opponent, the Republican primary, your choice. A lot of people took that deal. They came in sounding very much like Republicans. And they were, except for the amnesty pledges, the open borders pledges. And that's what Thune is. That's what McConnell is. That's what a handful of those left in GOP leadership are. The highest aim is always open borders. And, you know, if you want to know why we lost for so many years, it's because we had Republican leadership like that. But we don't anymore. We just got to get rid of some of these fossils who are genuinely evil people.
Meanwhile, a court decision that held YouTube and Meta responsible for allegedly making kids addicted to social media may change the product forever. Here's more with Mark Reardon.
This is a big deal. Ian Scher is back with a CBS News tech correspondent. So this is significant. We've been kind of tracking this for a few weeks. Actually two suits, right? Because it was one that kind of came out of Arizona and the one that was decided on a couple of days ago. So what are the overall implications for what happened this week in court?
Well, the bottom line is that, you know, when you talk about jury trials, you're really taking the temperature of the public opinion, right? And the thing that we are learning over and over again is that people are sick and tired and frustrated with how the tech industry has been behaving. And now the message is pretty clear from two juries inside of 2 days in two different states that they believe these companies need to take responsibility for the harms that whatever you want to say about them, the harms that are caused by their apps.
Yeah, so this goes to court for 7 weeks, 40 hours of deliberations across 9 days. This one in LA, finding Instagram and YouTube liable for designing their platforms to addict young users. That obviously could set a precedent for a lot of other lawsuits nationwide. I mean, this really does open a Pandora's box, doesn't it, Ian?
It does. I mean, it feels very much like the tech industry's tobacco moment. The difference, of course, between tobacco and the tech industry is that the tobacco executives, you know, they knew they were killing people. Right.
Right.
That wasn't
right.
very much of a surprise. But what's interesting about the tech industry is that even though a lot of this started with research from inside of Meta and actually finding that the Instagram in particular was having a negative impact on teenagers' mental health, there wasn't really this perception that the apps themselves were dangerous. And I think that what is going to change as a result of this, whether it's the result of more lawsuits, which there will certainly be many more of those, or the result of political pressure from regulations and other countries and all that, is that these companies are going to have to think now much more about, you know, when they're building a new feature, what could the negative impacts be of that feature, rather than just simply, oh, hunky-dory, isn't this a cool little thing that we added to our app?
Yeah, they may have to think about it a little bit more thoroughly. So one of the things that's interesting to me about the L.A. verdict, because that got a lot of attention, but really the one the day before in New Mexico, they find Meta liable for $375 million in damages into a claim that, you know, that Instagram was turned into a breeding ground for child predators. But even when we're looking at, you know, $3 billion, $375 million, let's just say a billion or $2 billion, doesn't matter. That's still pocket change for these companies, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you can count in mere minutes per revenue how much money this is. Like, this is nothing in terms of a punishment toward them. What it is a real indicator that there is political opinion behind the idea that these companies need to be regulated, that they need to be reined in and whatnot. And so I would not be surprised if over the next year during the midterms that we are going to hear more and more about what Congress wants to do about the tech industry. And, you know, there's already a lot of anxiety about tech, right? AI and job growth and all of these questions are there too. You've got, you know, you write in Missouri and Kansas, you've got plenty of debate about data centers. And this is just yet another thing on top of that list that people are like, wow, I'm really frustrated at these tech people.
So in these cases, I think it was in the LA one, the YouTube team tried to distance the existence of their app from Instagram and other social media platforms. And there might be something to this too, because look, they say YouTube is, you know, it's for free, right? You don't have to sign up for an account. You can, of course, with premium. But isn't there a difference between YouTube and Instagram and some of these other things? I mean, I guess what the jury did is they held them liable, but they split the liability 70-30, weighing it heavily to Meta, but they still said YouTube was somewhat liable.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, they are both using algorithmic feeds, right? And an algorithmic feed essentially is a computer program picking and choosing what it shows you based upon what it thinks you're going to like. And this is only something that's been going on for the last 10 years or so. We didn't have them before that. And those algorithmic feeds are at the heart of a lot of this debate. The belief that when people go down rabbit holes of, you know, whether it be self body image issues or whatever else, that it's those algorithms pushing them down because, you know, the computer's just trying to figure out, well, is he going to watch more, right?
Right, right, right.
What's it take for him to watch more?
Yeah.
And that is, and that's, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so on some level, I'm curious whether or not these companies are going to change any of that. But YouTube and Meta, they both use algorithmic feeding.
You know, it reminds me of a few years ago. I may even share this story with you. I know I did the audience. Remember, Sue, when I somehow clicked on something, or there was something in my Instagram feed about like Mini Kiss. Mini
yes.
Kiss is this
yes.
group of, I don't know if they're dwarves or little people, and they dress up like Kiss. Well, so I had you know, clicked on that at one point, and then my feed for the next 3 days was all like little people stuff. It was weird, but that's what they do.
Yes, yes. And it's not weird. It's actually a feature.
Yeah.
And that is part of why you see the pushback from these juries. They're effectively telling the companies, regardless of how much they're penalizing them in terms of dollars, they're telling these companies that these features are not wanted, and in fact, that there is an increasing belief that they are harmful.
Yeah, and I think they are harmful, and I think there is something to that. Now, a lot of this, and we had this discussion last night, a lot of this still has to go to parental responsibility and getting involved. There's apps that you can use to limit your kids' time on these features. Parents need to get more involved. Look, I'll be honest. I'm still trying to make sure I'm on top of this. I got an 11-year-old daughter, and things are different than when my older kids were that age. You know, I mentioned the worst thing I was worried about with them is they're in the basement constantly in the dark playing video games. But the social media stuff is different. And, you know, we don't let her go onto these places, but these kids are also very wily and they know how to access these things one way or the other, right?
They do. And look, there's definitely a parental responsibility part, just as there always is, right? And most of the research that we've seen around these types of questions have shown that parents who are communicating regularly with their kids are less likely to have these types of issues. And it doesn't mean you have to memorize and learn all the apps in and out, because I know you're busy. I am too. It's a lot to do. But just making sure that the kids know that they have someone they can talk to when that things are weird, that they understand what is safe on the internet and what isn't and how to respond to that. Those tools, which all of us sometimes need, are what help them get through this. And unfortunately, the apps themselves just don't do a good enough job of protecting them otherwise.
Ian Scherr from CNET is, I'm sorry, from CBS News. I gave the old the old job a little credit there. Since we have not, so we have a great local sponsor. His name is George Rosenthal from a company called ThrottleNet. They're an IT company here in St. Louis. And he really has been dazzling us with some stuff related to AI. I have not spoken with you about AI. Sue and I's position is scares the living daylights out of us. George's recommendation is always, you know, give it a try and use it. I have not really dipped my feet into the water outside of just going on Google and seeing what the AI responses are. Some of it is overwhelming. It's scary. But on the other hand, people, I know my wife uses it in her business. People are using this and being successful, but it's still kind of scary, Ian, isn't it?
Well, it is.
You'll all see lots of protests, at least this weekend, with hundreds of so-called No Kings rallies. Here's what to expect if you have to head out from Vanita Saucer in Minneapolis.
The lineup is pretty long as far as who's going to be performing. Although, even if you are not going to this rally or involved in this rally, if you are at all in the area, you're going to be impacted because there's a lot of different roads that will be impacted.
Yeah, and they're saying it's going to be kind of a fluid situation depending on the needs or what they need as far as closures and things like that. So what is planned anyway may change throughout the course of the afternoon. But essentially, if you're going to be heading toward downtown St. Paul, be prepared. And who knows how long that'll last. So the closures will be in place.
Depending on crowds and how many, you know, how long it takes people to get in and get out, those closures could last longer.
Into the evening, especially around the state capitol. Okay. And maybe even extend beyond that once the event releases and people start leaving, they may start doing some rolling closures just to help manage that situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just have to be aware of that. But who's paying for some of these things and how does the security work when you think of all of those people? It's not like we're new to rallies. Joining us now, former St. Paul Police Chief Todd Axtell. It's going to be a lot of people. And it's going to be in a concentrated area. I know they were estimating 100,000. It could be more than that, especially with the weather being as good as it is. Can you give us just, and I know you can't reveal a lot, but, you know, a sense of how security works for this and who pays for all this?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into a lot of moving parts, certainly with public safety, law enforcement partners. This is certainly a big one. You look at crowds of 100,000 plus, it can be overwhelming. So it'll be a big day. It's going to have a huge impact, certainly on traffic, local businesses, and for the women and men of public safety who are out there to make sure that people and property are safe.
They're calling it the flagship rally for nationwide rallies. And when you talk about some of the stars who are going to be there, Bruce Springsteen, Jane Fonda, some of these Joan Baez, well-known people, is there an added intensity? And how does that affect the work of a police department as they work to secure something like this in such an open area?
So there's some coordination there with local law enforcement, certainly the state capitol, Minnesota State Patrol. They'll be busy with this as well.
A huge part of it. But over and over again, we get the question of costs. So does St. Paul shoulder a lot of it? Does the state, do organizers pay in to help assure that there's security and all that stuff?
It does depend on the event. Under normal circumstances, an event like this, if you have a sponsor who's, sponsors do make money on some of these events, and you want to make sure that public safety expenses are being paid for by people who are potentially making money. So that's a conversation that goes on the front end. But certainly, regardless of who's paying, certainly the city of St. Paul has a responsibility, as well as the state of Minnesota, to make sure that people are safe, property is safe, traffic continues to flow. So, yes, of course, you want your city reimbursed and compensated. But the bottom line is, regardless of that, you have a job to do, is to make sure people are safe.
The protests are against Donald Trump and the war in Iran. So here's Mark Cox checking in with the latest.
You got former Senator Jim Talent on the line. Jim, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm fine, Mark. Thank you.
I think one thing we've learned is that, when it comes to the art of the deal, Trump negotiates like no one else. He also brags about it like no one else. But generally speaking, at the end of the day, he wins a lot. So I don't know if Chris Van Hollen is getting out over his skis here by claiming what Trump's doing here isn't going to work.
Yeah, I ought to read the president's book.
Yeah.
He really should. So what's happening here is, if you want to stop an aggressor, you got to change his intention or his capability, right? So, or both. So Trump spent, every president's tried to change Iran's intention. I mean, Obama bribed him. Every president's used sanctions. Biden begged him. Trump extorted him for about 5 or 6 weeks. He said, look, if you don't do what I want you to do, we're basically going to blow you up. So they didn't. So now we've blown them up.
Yeah.
He's got about a week left in that. And so he wanted to see if they've changed their intention. In essence, he's saying to them, well, have you guys had enough? And whether he does it directly or through intermediaries, that's what he's doing. Now, I don't know what Iran's going to say. I don't know that there is an Iranian government anymore. And this is a complexity that Senator Murphy evidently can't deal with. I mean, we've taken out the first, second, third ranks, or the Israelis have. So we will see what happens. I think that we finish this first phase of the campaign in the next week or so. The strait's going to be open then, and then we'll let the protesters out, and we'll see what happens.
Does this ongoing conflict with Iran and the impact it's having, for example, here in the United States with oil prices? Now, I saw this morning that the post office has its prices up about 8%. Airfare costs are expected to go up double digits. Is that potential going to hurt the Republicans come the midterms or in November?
Well, see, that's what all the official pundits are. And this is really pretty pitiful, is that they're completely focused on politics. And the answer, in my opinion, is no. As a matter of fact, Americans like their wars short and successful. And that's what people like Murphy are not looking at, is this is not going to go on indefinitely. When exactly it'll be over, I don't know. But well before November. We're going to get the strait cleared. We'll see what happens to the Iranian regime, but we're going to be left with an adversary who, at minimum, has been completely defanged, which means a new day in the Middle East. So, I think, I don't know how much Americans are going to focus on foreign policy at all in November, but I think if they do, this is going to be a big plus.
Yeah, I think so, too. We've been hearing a lot about our allies not supporting us, particularly a couple of our NATO allies I'm thinking about, Spain and the UK. And then I saw this article in Breitbart that said Britain is answering the call and will lead a coalition of nations sending warships to keep the strait open. I mean, day late and a dollar short, but at least they're showing up, Jim. Should we be encouraged by that?
Well, yes. And I mean, and I don't want to take a shot at our British friends, but what's really significant is India has a navy. Britain really doesn't. I mean, there's no other way to say it. They have about 25 surface combatants. So, yeah, they're going to send some ships, but we're going to see other countries that do have a navy. They're already doing it because, of course, it threatens them as well. This business with a strait is Iran's version of a doomsday weapon, and it's not going to work. It's not working now. And, they are, I mean, to the extent that they're still thinking about it, I mean, still rational, I'm sure they're disappointed at how little effect it's had, yeah, relatively speaking. I mean, gas is less than it was when Biden was president, right?
Still.
And it's yeah. And so we're going to go through this phase. Nobody likes it. But you see, it's an argument for the war, Mark, because they always had this ability. And after the war, they're not going to have the ability anymore. See, the point is, all these arguments that we shouldn't have done this because they're going to retaliate are arguments for doing it now while they're weak and they can't retaliate effectively. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
So, yeah, and now we take away, their at minimum, their power to retaliate. The regime may go. I mean, I've been listening to a bunch of experts, and they don't know. I mean, I think it's probably 50-50 that it falls. But if it doesn't, it's going to be internally focused because they're going to be spending all their time trying not to get killed by their own people.
The media is trying to play up a conflict between Trump and Netanyahu over trying to arm the citizens. Have you heard about that?
Yeah. It's an open question and a difficult one, because who do you arm? The groups that would be most effective in terms of fighting strength are like certain ethnicities. They don't want civil war in Iran. We don't want civil war in Iran. So what we do in terms of overthrowing the regime after the military campaign is over is a difficult question. I think we have to see what happens when the protesters hit the street. Personally, I would like the Israelis to still be active after the main campaign is finished so they can assist the protesters and they can keep targeting IRG and Basij and regime security forces to help the protesters. I don't know if that will happen, but that's personally what I would like to see.
Yeah.
And here to wind things down in the way only he can is Bob Rose.
Top story, DHS will get funded. Yep, the Senate was up late last night and even early this morning, about 2 a.m. Looks like they put something together. The Democrats will say they won a victory because it doesn't include funding for ICE. It cuts back on CBP funding. But don't worry, those things will be taken care of. The most important thing is DHS will be funded, and the TSA workers are going to finally get paid. It's been 43 days, long enough. You know, it took the president having to put out an executive order. Then all of a sudden, you know, the Senate actually, hold on now. We can do something here. Yeah, love it, right?
Yeah.
Operation Epic Fury, day 28. As the president has said, things are going well, and they have been communicating with some of the powers in Iran. And those are all good things.
Yep.
And we'll talk about that a little bit further coming up. They had a great get together in the Oval Office. You know, Marco Rubio was there, Scott Bessent. I mean, basically giving a report of how things are going on really at every level. Mm-hmm. And things are going well. I'm feeling very optimistic. I don't like the idea of war, but I feel confident that this thing will be wrapped up. We'll be in a very different place, let's say, in the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
And then there's old Jimmy Kimmel and his not funny bits.
Yeah?
Yeah, this guy's ratings suck. He sucks. Is he even trying to be funny? Listen to him take a swing at Mark Wayne Mullen, which, by the way, he would never do in real life, the big cat.
Trump's got a whole new generation of thinkers lined up, including his newly confirmed Secretary of Homeland Security, Mark Wayne, Chuck Mike, Bruce Dave Mullen. Maybe Mellon's better. He is the now former senator of Oklahoma. Before he was elected to the Senate, Mark Wayne Mullen was a low-level MMA fighter and a plumber. That's right. We have a plumber protecting us from terrorism now. I work for Super Mario. Why not Mark Wayne? But honestly, I mean, if Trump is going to keep picking these unqualified people to run the department, why not have more fun with it? I mean, next time, instead of Mark Wayne, how about Little Wayne for Homeland Security?
Okay. All right, that part was kind of funny.
But does he really want to compare the administration of Trump versus that of Joe Biden?
You're talking about bald men with makeup on stealing luggage?
Yeah, that's okay. A star, health folks, dudes wearing dresses and, Yeah,
Mayor Pete. Dude wants to be a lady?
Yes. Uh-huh. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Really, you want to go there, Jimmy?
Yeah, we've pointed out in the past Biden's picks are usually like, who would be the worst person for this? And like, oh, okay, yes. Let's get Pete Buttigieg there.
Oh yeah,
yeah, he'll do a great job when he's not busy breastfeeding.
Oh, and you want to call this guy a low level MMA? You want to take him on there, dude?
Of course not.
Really?
These guys, these so-called entertainer, comedian, so-called whatever types,
right.
No, they couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag. Yeah, and I like how, a low-level MMA. Mm. If you train and you fought, and apparently he had a pretty good record, and I don't know who he fought and all this, but I can tell you this, it requires a lot of discipline and a lot of training, and it hurts. As much as you maybe get good at inflicting pain, you better be able to receive it. Yeah. That's a tough go for anybody. And look, you can make fun of that all you want, but that shows this kind of warrior spirit. And that, to me, is important. That's what Trump wants around him. He wants people that, either are warriors or think like warriors, have a warrior spirit and a warrior mentality. And I think he's got a great pick there. And then, Jimmy Kimmel doesn't know his audience. He thinks being a plumber like is somehow funny, or you must be some sort of adult or a dummy.
Right.
I don't know if he actually pays his own bills. He probably has people that work for him that okay expenses. Then somebody else writes a check. Yep. Somebody else delivers it. You know what I mean? He's got a plethora of people that work for him. So he's never had to get his hands dirty or probably even watch someone get their hands dirty, right? Or he's so far removed from it now, he doesn't even, maybe he's not even sure what a plumber does. You know all that stuff that comes out of your mouth?
Yeah.
Well, that could leak out of your bathroom toilet, and the plumber's there to fix that. Okay? So, here's somebody that has a skill set.
Yeah.
And apparently he's good enough to be able to take a vacation from that and represent in the Senate.
Uh-huh. Well, I was going to say, does he not understand where people are supposed to come from that are supposed to represent us?
Well, that was my next point.
Sorry, jumped in.
No, that's all right. The founding of the nation.
Yes.
Who sat around there? They were farmers. Yeah. For the pictures, and they got dressed up because that's what you did back then. But these were farmers for the most part.
Right.
And they came together and put together a constitution and have led us to, self-rule. Mm-hmm. I mean, people like Jimmy Kimmel are doing their best to screw it up. But, the founding fathers. And then the intent was you're going to leave the homestead, the business that you have, temporarily. Mm-hmm. And you're going to represent the people in your area, either as a, as a congressman or as a senator, whatever the case may be. And then go back. Think about it. Serve your nation. Really, you were serving your nation. Now you're serving yourself.
Well, and if we want to go down the road of if we're putting, jobs in categories, and I love the way you described it years ago. These guys like Kimmel, they are the court jesters of our time. You're a clown. So what are you? Just because, unfortunately, America has and the world have put you on pedestals, you're a clown. Nothing against real
clowns.
I mean,
would you agree? Would he agree that Abraham Lincoln was one of our greatest presidents? He came from an impoverished background.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Lost a bunch of races before he actually started to win. So, Lincoln splitting logs, would he make fun of that?
Hmm.
What about Ronald Reagan? He worked as a lifeguard.
Yeah.
And he was an actor. Turned out to be a pretty darn good president.
Wait a minute. You can be an actor and then become the commander-in-chief? Wow, that's a great thing in America.
Yeah.
He's such a loser.
Well, and they wonder, these guys like him and Colbert, maybe they don't wonder. Maybe they're just so ensconced in their own little world insulated in such a way that maybe they don't. And they still hang around with the same people, the same hangers-on, the yes people that go, you're so awesome that maybe they're not even aware, really, of how the vast majority of the people, how we see them.
Right.
Yeah. Not funny. Nothing but agenda there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I feel sorry for the writers. Can you imagine you're a writer and you're actually quick-witted and you could go after anybody and make it funny? But they say, oh, no, no, no. No, no, no. Don't go after any Democrats at all.
Uh-huh.
Look, except for maybe Fetterman. We hate him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about right.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.